Since I am listed as a co-author, I guess I can, before I start my own stuff, and even though I, again, this is a John and Johnson, or Johnston Jang, and one of those things, and I always jokingly say, at least it's not Johnson and Johnson. So you don't need to think about any product here. Going back to your point regarding religion versus spirituality, and I think that's a really fascinating topic. And my training is in sociology, and my specialty is in criminology. Compared to psychology, mental health literature, neuroscience, as you saw this morning, sociology and criminology have been very indifferent, to say the least, to even the possibility of spirituality. At best, they tolerate the idea of religiosity. That's okay. You know, it's kind of religion ghetto people. You know, you talk about those things, but don't say that religion is really a central variable that sociology and criminology should consider. Now, what I have recently studied is to conceptually separate religion and spirituality. At least that's my conceptual view. More specifically, and also this conceptualization is very consistent with very common, widely perceived distinction between religion and spirituality. That is, religion is always tied to organized and institutionalized religion, and religion is immediately have you think of attending worship services, prayer, and then and other activities. On the other hand, spirituality is really tied to institution, but it's more of experience, relationships, and then transcendence, and so forth. And I was surprised by seeing the amount of work that has already been done in outside of sociology and criminology. So my plan is to, learning from outside of sociology and criminology, and I want to bring the idea of a spirituality and human spirituality beyond religiosity. So, and I several years ago, and actually Mario and I were in the same John Templeton Foundation Spiritual Transformation Project, and I, at the time, using small grant, I collected data using a national sample of college students, specifically designed to capture not only traditional, typical criminological, sociological concepts, but also I wanted to measure what I thought then was a spirituality. And also I included, now earlier there was a point regarding, okay, we have a significant effect of religiosity involvement, but how can we know whether that's truly religious effects rather than some confounding effects? Most sound research controls for family-related variables, school variables, and peer variables, and force. And even many of our studies confirm that after controlling for those all those confounders, we still have significant effects. So there got to be something, but we know the remaining significant effect doesn't mean that that's religious effect, because that's just remaining leftover effects. So what I have become interested is, okay, how can we specify the intervening or explanatory mechanism between, for example, church attendance and mental health? So some years ago already, I think 10 years ago, the Fetzer Institute and National Institute of Aging, they gathered all the top-level scholars in religion and spirituality. They came up with a really neat and very comprehensive, which I have already included in my own data set. So the data have been sitting in my file drawer for some years, and I, with the general support from the ISR, I finally have begun working on this issue to address the issue of religion and spirituality, and I think it's a fascinating topic. Since Byron has finished early, I guess I have some extra time, unless moderator stops me early. Now, Byron has provided a wonderful context, very brief but very clear summary of what we know based on sociological and criminological research about the effects of religious involvement. Now, my research is one of those many studies, and especially when you study the religious effects, you can study religious effects in many different ways. And one thing, as I have already mentioned, what does this remaining significant effect of church attendance on delinquent behavior, drug use? And I think that's a terribly interesting and important thing. And another thing that we have looked at is what's the role of religious involvement or religious commitment in terms of a coping behavior? Does it help to be religious when you try to deal with adversity and some crisis even? Now, this is another topic that I became interested in, and specifically, as you can guess from the title, whether we can explain the race differences in drug use, in this case, the race differences specifically referred to differences between black and white youth using a religion variable. That's the main the focus of this study. Now, this is interesting. Now, when we usually think of black-white differences in criminal offending, and even when you don't take any criminology and juvenile delinquency, due to the wonderful help of the news media, we kind of have an image where the black youth and offenders, teenagers, are more delinquent and criminal and violent, and especially, which is true, even though it is also true that not most the black African-American teenagers do not engage in delinquent behavior. But when you compare white and African-American teenagers and juveniles, it is true that, and especially when you focus on violent and serious offendings, the black youth tend to report higher levels of involvement in illegal behaviors. But interesting thing, which I bet many of you didn't know, is that when it comes down to drug use, it's quite the opposite. And first of all, that finding, the reversed inequality, is quite interesting. And we wanted to know why that's the case. And this race difference is especially interesting because it's a reversed inequality, which means we will have more challenge in identifying the factors that will help us explain. Because many of the factors that we use to explain black-white differences in non-drug delinquent behaviors and other illegal behaviors are not going to work. So that makes this project interesting, and as a potential explanatory variables, we wanted to focus on religiosity. Now, if you look at the existing research on adolescent drug use, typically focus on two main factors, what we call protective factors and risk factors. Byron has already talked about it. And these are the examples. That is, if you have more prosocial characteristics, such as strong attachment to parents, or your school grades are very good and you don't want to put it to a risk, Or if you have a positive self-concept and you think of yourself as a good kid, then research shows that positive concept, to a lesser extent, positive self-esteem, unlike what many people tend to believe, and including my own research, self-esteem isn't working exactly as many people tend to think, but self-concept has a significant effect. And risk factors, and these are the antisocial factors. And if you score high on these factors, then you are at higher risk of engaging in drug-using behavior. Not surprisingly, having drug-using friends, low self-control, or psychological distress. Now, these are the key explanatory factors that existing research have been using to explain how we can understand drug use behavior. Now, one key limitation that we have noticed is that the existing research tends to be non-developmental, by which I mean most research is limited in terms of the developmental stage that was studied, and I don't have a specific percentage figure, but very high percentage of existing research is based on data collected from teenagers, understandably, because that's when drug use begins. But our perspective is more life course perspective. That is, we need to examine what's going on during adolescence by putting it in between childhood and adulthood. So that's the limitation that we wanted to address directly. And also for religious involvement, we wanted to examine not only your current involvement in religious activities, whether how often you go to church now or over the past month, but we were interested in how about your background, religious upbringing. Were you raised in a religious family or not? Would that matter? And certainly that's a very legitimate life course question. So those two are the key limitations that we wanted to address in this study. Now, previous studies have looked at, risk factor and protective factor. And among those, we are focusing on these two key factors. One is exposure to drug users, and the other is religion as a protective factor. For exposure to drug users, the theoretical basis is a social learning idea. That is, where if you were raised by drug-using parents, the parents who smoke, drink, and even using illicit drugs, then all kinds of learning mechanism becomes relevant, imitation or observational learning, even when parents do not actively teach them how to use drugs and how to smoke, but simply watching their parents smoking, drinking on a regular basis, or even smoking something looking like a cigarette and then suddenly look high. And they will say, perhaps this is a part of life, and this is acceptable lifestyle. And then when it comes to peer relationships and other drug users, differential reinforcement and peer pressure, even when you are not favorable to drug use, but you are under pressure from your friends. So for the exposure to drug users, we can take a look at those variables, and the research tends to suggest that the blacks tend to score lower on these factors, specifically whether they are raised by drug-using parents or having friends who use drugs, lower than their white counterparts. Now, protective key factor religion that we are focusing on here is based on theory of informal social control, because the religion and religious involvement increases the levels of control, and also pro-social learning, and to some extent moderating stress, which may increase the chance of drug use. And specifically for religion, we are looking at religiosity or religiousness and the denominational affiliation. And as I mentioned a minute ago, and we're also interested in examining the influence of religious background and upbringing. And especially the latter construct has not been used often, mainly because the data set are not often available, you know, looking at the childhood dynamics as well as adolescence. Now, for these variables, the existing research tend to suggest that the black youth tend to be more religious than white kids in terms of church attendance and so forth. So at least we have a reasonable ground that we can use these factors to explain black-white differences in drug use. Another methodological issue that previous researchers have looked at is that, well, not necessarily because of those protective factor, risk factor, but rather actually the black youth tend to underreport their involvement in illegal behaviors than white kids. And I looked at existing research and all kinds of design. And the conclusion is that, that's true. To some extent, the black youth are more likely to underreport their involvement in illegal activities, including drug use. But the sound, fair conclusion would be that is not going to completely explain away black-white differences. So we still have a reason to take a look at this, rather than saying, it's because the African-American teenagers just do not report honestly. That is true, but that is not going to completely explain away. And here is first hypothesis. And as I said, we want to establish whether it is true that black youth use more drugs than white youth during adolescence and young adulthood. Now, once we establish this basic baseline relationship, and we want to examine using those four key explanatory variables, whether observe the black-white differences kind of become smaller, if not completely disappear, and using these variables, religious upbringing and childhood exposure to parents' drug use, and the current religiosity and association with drug-using peers. Now, for religious upbringing, we are based on existing literature. We decide to focus on evangelical Protestant tradition, which sends out very clear anti-drug message. So that was the variable that we used. And then we used the items whether parents used cigarettes and other tobacco products and drank or even used illegal drugs while they were still during their childhood. And for the religious involvement, we used the typical limited but best we can do items, attending church worship services, whether church, synagogue, or in other places, houses of worship, and then the perceived, the subjective religiosity and how religious do you think you are. And then for the drug-using peers, we used same items in terms of type of drugs examined, so smoking, drinking, and illegal drugs. Now, here is a theoretical model, and I think the maths graph was too simple. So I wanted to show that that's not all social scientists are doing. We do complicated stuff like this. And here the picture is that basically, this is structure equation modeling, and obviously if you're familiar with, and working at the latent variable construct rather than manifest variables. Let's see. Now that's our key exogenous variable, race variable, where black versus white, and then we have a key endogenous variable, drug use, and then two childhood explanatory variables, and then two adolescence and young adulthood variables. So our task First, we want to know whether there are truly significant differences between blacks and whites in terms of drug use. If so, then as we introduce, use those explanatory variables, evangelical Protestant background, and whether the parents use drugs during childhood, and then the current association with drug-using peers and religious involvement, whether those factors will explain the initial relationship between race, being black, and drug use during adolescence and young adulthood. The data that we used, the existing data, actually it's kind of old data, but I think it's a good data, three-way panel study of a national sample of children based on a pretty good complicated sampling strategy called National Survey of Children. And three-wave, as I said, 76, 81, and 87. So again, it's all data, but you don't often have the data that covers three main stages of development, childhood, adolescence, and young adulthood, or emerging adulthood. So we believe that this is a good data to invest our time on, and measures religious upbringing, and as I have said, we wanted to focus on evangelical Protestant tradition, and there was about 10 years ago, Steensland et al., a group of UNC sociologists of religion, they proposed the scheme called RealTrad, which has been widely accepted and used, that divide up denominations into these, and we could come up with all the denominations except the black Protestant, because our data did not allow us to separate black Protestant from evangelical and mainline Protestant. And I'm not going to spend too much on measures, but we have child's religiosity, the inter-item reliability may not be necessarily impressive for psychologists, but sociologists, we are happy with this, 0.79, and not so strong, but 0.6. Now here the one limitation here is the parent drug use during the youth childhood was measured based on youth retroactive report, the memory. So we decided to incorporate that into our model by controlling for the correlation between measurement errors. And as I said, we have measured cigarette smoking and illicit drugs as well as drinking alcohol. And these are the control variables. As a confounding potential, confounding factors, control variables, and these are pretty much standard. The protective factors, risk factors, and of course, we control for the basic standard socio-demographic characteristics by controlling for gender, age, and so forth. Here is a descriptive statistics, which may not mean too much, but let me draw your attention to a particular area where I notice, as a preliminary finding, we found a significant difference between blacks and whites in the expected direction for all the key explanatory variables. For example, as we anticipated, the black youth were raised by parents, were less likely to be raised by parents who used drugs when they were in childhood compared to their white counterparts. Same expected finding regarding drug-using peers and being raised in evangelical Protestant tradition, and with one exception, religiosity, we found the black youth were more religious in terms of those measures. And then, of course, drug use, as we anticipated. So that's a good start. And this is just a Frequency distribution of region of residence and religion child was raised. The majority was raised in evangelical Protestant, followed by Catholic and mainline Protestant, and so forth. And we found that this distribution is not very far from what you would get in other national survey. So again, that gave us more confidence. Now here is the model that we estimated. We began the rectangle indicates all control variables, and then we have here key explanatory variables, and up there we have coefficient for the race variable. So here, obviously, our interest is as we enter individual explanatory variables, or jointly, whether the black-white difference changes in terms of the size of coefficient of the black variable. And at the bottom here, we provided, we didn't just look at whether size becomes smaller, but rather we wanted to test whether the reduction is actually statistically significant. And we found in some models we observed significant reduction, and that's what you see on your right. Basically, the model 6, which included current religious involvement and drug using pure association, and then model 7, where the religious background and youth religiosity. So that clearly indicates that if you look at those model 6 and 7, and one overlapping variable is religious involvement. So even though, as you can see, in model 3, youth religious involvement alone cannot significantly explain black-white differences, but together with other variables, so using these variables, so eventually if you look at the full model on your right side, you can see that significant reduction, even though still we have race differences. And as you can see, negative 0.249, significant. But compared to what we began with on our left, negative 0.453, so reduction from negative 0.453 to negative 0.249, that reduction we found again statistically significant, which was a good news. Bringing back to this picture, we estimated a three-panel model, and overall model fit was good, and especially in terms of RMSAA, 0.048, which is really good, and 90% confidence interval is also good in terms of that. Okay. We have empirical support for the first hypothesis, and we have some support for second hypothesis. And again, we didn't necessarily anticipate using those four variables we will completely explain black-white differences, but as we hoped, as we hypothesized, we found those key variables help us understand why the black youth tend to use lower levels of drugs, and especially among those factors, we noticed that the religious involvement tends to be a kind of leading explanation. So that's my presentation. And if you have any questions, I guess that means just come down. No, one. Yes. Right. Retrospective, and that's why here
this measurement correlation, which we found as anticipated positive significant, which means there must have been some memory based methodological artifact, so which we believe controlled as much as we can. So yeah, that's the best we could do because we have no direct influence.
Yes. It's a national sample, therefore it consists of all different types of communities. So some of them are large cities and some of them are non-urban areas. So it's a combination of all different types. And that's another advantage of national survey. That is, instead of looking at only certain type of community, we look at the nation as a whole. That involves kind of a multi-stage sampling design. So, for example, you begin with state level. So, out of 50 states, for example, you select a certain states randomly, and then within state, and you go down the smaller units. And eventually individual youth or teenagers who will be randomly selected. So it involves multi-stage sampling design. This one was based on a combination of personal interview, face-to-face interview, and then later waves were based on telephone survey.